Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me, as always, is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you today?
Doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're having trouble with guests, Jasmine. We've got people scheduled, but, you know, schedules kind of get in the way. But we will have guests again soon, just not this particular
podcast.
Well,
it's probably better that we don't, because there's a lot to talk about.
There really is. There's a lot to talk about, Jasmine, because the 2019 session is underway. They had the second day of the session today. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Jasmine's going to update us about the gubernatorial race, which is absolutely underway with multiple candidates talking about multiple different things on both sides of the aisle. And then we're going to finish off by talking about an attorney general candidate who is declared as running for that office, and that is Greg Stumbo. I did a segment because I thought we should talk a little bit about him and kind of like what he's about and who he is, because I think that needs to be done. And so, without any further ado, let's get into talking about the 2019 session. Jasmine, new legislators were sworn in on Tuesday, and the only major business that took place on that date had to do with a contested election in Kentucky 13, the Owensboro District, which is a seat that Jim Glenn won by one vote. We know about this, right?
Yeah, we've talked about it quite a bit.
Right. Just to remind everybody, though, the recount process in Kentucky for legislative races is apparently different by law than recounts in several other areas. They are handled directly by the legislature, which I think is really weird. Now, Representative Glenn's lawyers disagree with this interpretation of the law, saying that this process makes, quote, a mockery of the free election process. So even though Democrats asked that this matter be referred to the Judiciary Committee, Republicans went ahead and moved ahead with the method that's laid out in the statute. 9 members of the House of Representatives were selected at random on the floor of the House to hear the challenge. And I just said statute, but I don't know if that's true. I think it's actually in the Constitution. I'm not sure. It's just weird. The rules are weird. This is a weird situation we find ourselves
right,
in.
Right. It seems like a checks and balances issue.
Right.
To me.
It seems like the courts should oversee a recount of a legislative election.
Okay, so when you say that 9 members are selected at random, that's like every member together in a pot, not like this many random Republicans and this many random Democrats.
Yes, they rolled everybody's name up into capsules and then put them in a box and drew them out of the box.
Okay.
It was very strange. This all happened. There were reports all over of it happening in real life. We ended up with 6 Republicans and 3 Democrats, which is
about, mm-hmm. you know, if we're talking about probability here, this is about what you would get,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty much falls right in line. The Democrats are leader Rocky Adkins, kind of surprisingly. The Democratic leader's name was drawn out of the hat. Josie Raymond from Louisville, friend of the show, been on the show, will probably be back on the show maybe to talk about this shortly. And Patty Minter, who is a freshman Democrat from Bowling Green, who won a close election. On the Republican side, Tommy Turner, Jason Petrie, Bart Rowland, Matthew Koch, Steve Riley, and Majority Leader Bam Carney were selected. So we have 2 legislative leaders on this group. That was kind of dramatic. The only thing that group has done so far is elected Jason Petrie to be the chairman of this group, and they scheduled a meeting for today, and we haven't heard anything about what happened within that. Of course, this is going to be about the 17 absentee ballots that were disqualified by the election board, and we'll see what happens with it. It'll be a huge mess for sure. Okay, there aren't any instructions about what's going to happen next, but that's kind of what we expect to happen. Okay, one bill that did make news earlier this week as it was kind of introduced was Senator Danny Carroll's bill to reduce the amount of information that would be available via the state's open records law. So the media pressed him pretty hard on this, and he said that he did not write the bill, but was given the bill by a member of the Secret Service and an officer with the Homeland Security Department. He said that they basically gave him the bill, and he just filed it. He actually, after having a lot of this controversy happen, he pulled the bill and said that he was going to tighten the focus of the bill to be less about transparency and more about protecting people's private information. So what do you think about that?
It seems like a bill that would limit open records would be about transparency.
Yeah.
Right.
This is a big point that the Courier Journal made, was like, anytime that we're making changes to our open records law, we need to think about, like, okay, well, what is available now that we don't want people to have access to? And I think that, you know, Senator Carroll is trying to say that, like, we don't want, you know, stalkers or exes or violent
sure.
people to have access to people's personal information, where they live and stuff. But if you're going to make a law about that, you need to consider what consequences might happen otherwise. I saw Louisville's open data officer talk about this bill and said, you know, if there's a $500 penalty per offense, you know, if something they find in the open data violates this because of some random law change, that could be a huge, huge problem for Louisville, and could really threaten the idea of open data and open and transparent government.
Just, right.
Yeah. So that's, you know, I'm glad that Senator Carroll pulled this bill. If he does want to file something like this, I do certainly hope that he does a little bit more research into it. Okay, there were also new rules that were posted in the Capitol this week that restricted protests. Did you see this? It was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, the rules that were posted include, quote, keep conversations quiet.
Use your inside voice, yes. Please.
Yeah, no signs and, quote, no cameras, video cameras, or cell phone cameras. Tasma, why do you think they did this?
I don't know. Maybe because of the teachers.
Could be the teachers. I think it's likely because there were like several thousand teachers that showed up and yelled at them. And they were like, well, you're breaking the rules now. So I don't know.
This kind of seems like a First Amendment problem.
Absolutely.
Though.
Yeah. If they try to enforce these rules, they will certainly find themselves with a First Amendment lawsuit on their hands. And there was immediate pushback from both, you know, concerned citizens groups and from the Democratic Party. Also, one thing that I thought was a little surprising and maybe not all the way thought through, shocking, is that cell phone cameras are often used by members to take pictures of just the vote board, just to kind of see where their mm-hmm. legislator voted and to send it back
yep.
to, you know. And the LRC does release those in PDF format, but usually not till later in the day. So that's a way for this news to get out a little bit quicker. Okay, at the end of the day, it's unlikely that we're going to hear much more from the legislature this week. The first week of the short session, this is the short session, it usually is mostly used to do organization, set up this group was a big thing, the Kentucky 13 group. According to an AP report, the GOP Senate leadership expects to have a hearing on a few bills this week, including another abortion restriction. I think it's called a fetal heartbeat bill. I'm not quite sure exactly what that means.
Yeah, I believe that's a Robert Goforth bill.
Yeah, he's in the House, so the Senate, I guess, also introduced a similar bill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm sure that conservative Republicans are falling over themselves to file abortion restrictions as they normally are. And also there was talk to have a debate about a limit to executive branch lobbying. So right now there's a lot of restrictions on who can lobby the legislative branch, but there aren't a lot of rules about who can go into agencies and lobby those people to do certain things. So the legislature wants to take a look at that. That's also potentially a sign of a deteriorating relationship between a Republican legislature and a Republican executive branch. Senate President Stivers also called marijuana a gateway drug on Wednesday, so there's a lot of people who had hoped that a marijuana bill might make it, you know, to the floor this time, but that obviously is going to be a roadblock for that.
Right.
Yeah. So that's where we are. Not a lot has happened. People are there. Well, there's all new pictures of all your new representatives up there. So if you have a new representative or if you'd like to see your new representative's headshot, take a look. It's pretty fun. I like that there's picture days and, you know, there's been a lot of turnover this year. So it's good to see a bunch of new faces there in Frankfort.
And I heard they got offices.
They did. They did get offices on the first day. Charles Booker was like, here's my office. And I was like, this is one.
He had a cool blue couch.
He did. He
I
did
love the couch.
Yeah. I said this is one concrete way that Attica Scott literally paved the way because she raised a lot of ruckus when, rightly so, when she didn't get an office on the first day. And, you know, this year they had an office ready for Charles Booker. So there you go. Paving the way for the future. Okay. That's enough about the legislature. We'll obviously have a lot more as this session develops. But, you know, the big stuff right now is probably the gubernatorial race. So, Jasmine, tell us more that we need to know.
All right. So we are going to talk about who's in and who's out for the 2019 gubernatorial race. So first, who's in? We already know the Democrats that have been in for a while, and that's Andy Beshear and Rocky Adkins.
Right.
But we have a new challenger, Adam Edelin.
Making it official. We talked a little bit about it, but right. He made it official.
So this comes as a surprise to literally no one. And then last week, an Edelin Holland website was revealed, complete with their logo and then like a Hall & Oates video or something.
Yeah, I think that was an accident.
It was strange. So that came out last week, but Adam Edelin officially announced his campaign on Monday, January 7th in Lexington. And his running mate, as we thought, is Gil Holland, the Louisville developer.
Right.
So Edelin, of course, is the former state auditor who was defeated by Mike Harmon, a Republican in 2015. He's also one of the co-founders of the New Kentucky Project. Robert, what did you always say about the New Kentucky Project?
I did say this. It was the Adam Edelman for governor prelim campaign.
Right.
It kind of. Hey, I will say this about the NKP. I had a really good time at both of the things that they organized. They were really great events. I mean, obviously, the worst things about it probably came true, but I really enjoyed what it was.
Oh, yeah, me too. So Adam Edelman, he grew up in Meade County. He went to UK, and he's worked in both the private and the public sector. Namely, in the public sector, he was the chief of staff to Governor Steve Beshear.
Right.
I'd say the gist of his campaign is a more modern Kentucky. I think he'll be focusing a lot on energy and climate change, healthcare, and then modernizing the economy, which, for example, fixing Kentucky's tax code. And I've heard him say things like that. We've been building a Dollar General economy or something like that
right.
before. And so
it's a good line. We should let him deliver it at some point. Yeah.
So I think that those are where his biggest focus are, especially on energy and climate change. That's mm-hmm. something that he's talked about quite a bit. You know, we've said all along, though, that Elon will be running the furthest left between him, Beshear, and Rocky Atkins. But he's already run into some issues with progressives,
I believe.
So he called Colin Kaepernick a horse's ass back in 2016. And that kind of resurfaced on the internet. But he apologized this week. But he also stood by his position that Kaepernick didn't protest the right way.
Right.
He was just like, I shouldn't have called him a name.
Right.
That doesn't help discourse.
Right.
But he still made it clear that he still felt the same way about it. And I don't feel like he came out very strong.
Uh-huh. No, he definitely didn't walk back his position. He walked back his language. Right.
Right. And I heard this from Dawn Howard, so I have to give credit to her. She's said that the campaign launch was a little bootstrappy.
Right.
And I really like that term, a little bootstrappy.
And I guess that like comes from like bring yourself up by your bootstraps or whatever.
Which
like,
is, you know, a Republican,
right.
you know, coined term, I guess.
Right. It's like, you know, I did it all. Like, you can do it if you work hard and play by the rules or whatever.
Right. Which, you know, bootstrappy isn't always horrible, but it was a little bootstrappy, maybe.
It doesn't necessarily fit in with, like, the most progressive part of the Democratic Party.
Right. And he was also asked if he would be running the most progressive campaign. And he kind of, like, steered away from the question and said he doesn't like labels.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the issue is he needs these progressives to win in the primary if he's going to beat Rocky Atkins and Andy Beshear. That's, like, the lane he has to run in. But then if he does manage to win the primary, he then has to win an election for governor of Kentucky.
Right. And it seems like he's kind of right now started going the Allison Lundergan Grimes route when she ran against Mitch McConnell in the way that
I think he comes off as a little bit more. I mean, I actually do believe what he says. I think with Allison Lundergan Grimes, she was always like, I'm not going to tell you whether or not I voted for Barack Obama. I don't think that that's the type of thing we're seeing here. I think that we are seeing a little bit of, like, he's not going to be as full-throated a progressive as maybe people would have hoped for, but I also don't know if that's necessarily tenable when you're running an election
right.
for Kentucky.
I think based on just those two early responses to people's questions about whether he's progressive or not, I didn't really like the answers.
Right.
And I feel like he's going to continue to do this.
Right,
and
no.
he's going to run into a problem later, well, potentially.
I do think he's going to try to let his positions do more of this of speaking
I,
for him.
I yeah. agree with that. But yeah. I think people want him to be the more progressive one. And so he's going to continue to be questioned about that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that whoever put these questions in front of him, that's also a question for me. Like that his campaign opponents are likely, you know, going to push him on this. And this is a good way to do that. They found a way to kind of help him lose stature with the people that he needs to win without sacrificing their own campaign. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he comes back from this.
Yep, I think so too. Yeah. So that is our newest Democratic challenger. I'll also say in the Democratic race, Jeff Young has also filed to run, and he's ran for office several different times for several different offices. So there are actually four Democrats in the primary so far.
Yes, Jeff Young is running. That's right.
So our next announcement is Republican State Representative Robert Goforth announced that he is running for governor. We have talked about him because of his opposition to the pension bill, but also because of an abortion ban bill that he pre-filed and is filing again,
right.
And a bill to allow for concealed carry essentially everywhere, including schools, daycares, government meetings, bars, other places that firearms have previously been banned. So that's why we've talked about him in the past, but now we're talking about him because he is going to run for governor, probably against Matt Bevin. We'll talk about that a little later.
Right.
And he's kind of putting himself out there as an anti-Bevin, calling Matt Bevin arrogant. He said he's in the bag for corporate interest, and he said that we need a governor who leads more than he lambasts.
Right.
So he made his announcement in London, Kentucky. That's, you know, part of his district. And he announced that Mike Hogan, the Lawrence County attorney, as his running mate. So he did not go the more typical route of choosing a running mate of maybe a different demographic.
Really a different part of the state.
Well, that's what that means. So, you know, usually if you're from Eastern Kentucky, you try to get someone maybe from Louisville, but another white man from Eastern Kentucky is who he has selected. Mike Hogan was an attorney general candidate in 2015, but he was defeated by Whitney Westerfield in the Republican primary. So Goforth is a pharmacist by trade, and he also has a cattle farm in East Bernstadt, which is in Laurel County. He's a 2018 rookie legislator after winning a special election in February of last year, and then went on to win the Republican primary, and then went on to defeat the same opponent as a special election, Kelly Smith, in the general election. You know, so I guess Goforth is kind of like the economic populist candidate, right? So he, you know, he's very anti-pension, but very pro-gun rights.
I would say he's anti-pension reform bill. He's pro-pension.
Right. Yes. Didn't finish my thought there.
Very important thought to finish. This is very interesting to me how well he does. It's going to be tough running against an incumbent if the incumbent indeed does run. But yeah, this is an ideology that's definitely ascendant in the United States of like this very socially conservative, very, very anti-abortion, very pro-gun person. But at the same time, running as, you know, one of the most strident economic populists that's out there. This is a lane that used to be totally owned by the Democratic Party. Even 5 years ago, the Republican Party did not have this populist strain in it. I mean, this is the type of person that would have run as a Democrat like 10 years ago.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see what
he
does.
So my question for you, did people see this coming?
I definitely thought, I did not see it coming. No, but I'm not surprised. I will say it that way.
Like,
this is a big, bold step. But it's not one that I couldn't see him doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He definitely doesn't like Matt Bevin.
No.
Yeah.
He doesn't. So that is who is in so far. So my next category is who's probably in. And who's probably in is Governor Matt Bevin. You know, he told a crowd at a Republican Party of Kentucky dinner back in, I think, August that he was running, but he still hasn't filed. And as of today, we're 20 days until the filing deadline.
Right.
But we have to assume that he's going to.
I mean, he told us. And when has Matt Bevin ever steered us wrong?
That's true, Robert. I believe he also said on Terry Miners within the last month or so that he's still running, but that anyone who wants in can go ahead and get in. They don't have to wait for him.
Right.
So who's maybe in? A maybe is Jamie Comer. A slight maybe,
right?
I guess. So U.S. Congressman Jamie Comer, who was also Matt Bevin's 2015 primary opponent, said last week that he'd have significant interest in running for governor if Matt Bevin doesn't file. However, he said he's not going to run against an incumbent. So it looks like he's ready to jump in if Matt Bevin doesn't file. And, you know, the closer to the filing deadline we get, the more difficult it is for the average person to get into a race. But I think Comer has probably been approached a lot about this, and I think he'd be able to jump in and run pretty easily if he feels like he needs to. Jamie Comer's just really popular. in Western Kentucky. And
yeah,
so,
yeah, that'd be interesting. I don't know. He's definitely like comes off as a much more slick politician. I wonder if Robert Goforth was to run hard in Western Kentucky, what that would look like. I'm really curious. I don't know.
I really don't know. Yeah. But he's really popular. He's won his reelection races like really easily. I think Democrats would have more of a problem if he ends up being the candidate.
Yeah, I mean, Democrats are going to struggle if the candidate is not Matt Bevin, I think is certainly the case. Having a record is tough, and Jamie Comer's record is very much more in line with like what the East Louisville would be much more comfortable with Jamie Comer than they would
absolutely
with Matt Bevin. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And my other maybe, I had to include C. Wesley Morgan.
Right.
He's still been saying he's considering it, but he hasn't filed yet.
I saw this from Joe Sanka in a story. I think Joe Sanka just has Wesley Morgan's phone number and calls him when he wants to get like ridiculous things to write about. So
right. Yeah. And so finally, who's out? So Attica Scott, she's out. Representative Scott released a statement last weekend announcing that she would not seek the governorship in 2019. Her statement, she posted on Facebook and Twitter, so I'm not going to read it verbatim because you can go read it yourself. It was very well written. But she talked about spending time with her daughter, who's going to be leaving for college this year. But I think another important part of her statement was about the barriers to running for office. And she said that she wasn't in a financial position to take time away from her full-time job.
Right.
You know, I think that's something that's important to recognize, that it's hard for a lot of people
yeah
to run for office. She also said that she's not endorsing anyone yet and won't until someone emerges who has a clear agenda that includes eliminating poverty, promoting racial justice, women's rights, worker justice, environmental justice, fairness, and equity.
Yeah. I mean, it is such a huge sacrifice to run for this office. It will become your life. And, you know, that's a huge sacrifice to ask somebody to make. And if Representative Scott doesn't want to do it right now, I think that's, you know, it's almost too bad. I think that she would have been an interesting voice to have heard. I do think that this is probably the best move for her career, but that's just me talking.
Yeah. I think a lot of more progressive people will be looking to her to see who she does endorse, and she knows that.
Right.
She said that as much in her statement.
Right.
But she's holding out until she sees something from someone.
Yeah. Yeah. She's going to have the chance to solidify her position and spend time with her daughter. So that's great.
Right. And our other who's out is Amy McGrath. So in late December, Amy McGrath announced that she would not run for governor. She said she's humbled by the encouragement to throw her hat in the ring right away, but that she would not be seeking statewide office in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, will she run against Mitch McConnell in 2020?
Good question. Good question. I think that we will see her name on the ballot in 2020 in some form or fashion.
Right. Do you think anyone else is getting in?
To the governor's race?
Yeah. That wasn't mentioned.
The only person potentially I can think of is Allison Leonard Ingram.
Right. And so I almost created a probably not category, but I also, you know less than a lot of, you know, insiders, I guess. I don't have a lot of inside information about Allison Leonard Ingram. But I would say the recent arrival of Baby Ford and also maybe her ethics complaint would keep her out of the race, and maybe she will take some time off.
Yeah, I think that this is probably the field we've got. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with them. Okay, Jasmine, I wanted to take a second to talk about a different race that's going to be happening in Kentucky next year, and that's the attorney general's race. And the Democrats got their first candidate in that race recently. Greg Stumbo announced that he was going to run again for attorney general, which is an office he held once before. He was elected to it in 2003. So, Jasmine, when I say the name Greg Stumbo, that's great. Why are you sighing?
I feel like people are kind of sick of hearing his name, and that's why he lost his race a couple years ago.
Yeah. Okay. Greg Stumbo is a guy who has just a very long history. Yeah. And a lot of people don't like him because he's such a big target, I think, for Republicans and even for Democrats often as this avatar of, like, what's wrong with politics, I think. And that he's easy to put into that spot. He was most recently the Speaker of the House. He lost his election in 2016, but he's served as Attorney General, and he's been the Majority Leader in the House, and he was that for a long time. Greg Stumbo is absolutely reviled by Republicans. You will see Republicans get caught up in bad behavior all the time, and their first excuse is, well, at least it's not as bad as what Greg Stumbo used to do. I mean, it's like that's their key excuse for any, like Matt Bevin eliminates an entire board and reforms it. Well, Greg Stumbo used to do much worse. It's like the Republicans, jammed through this pension bill at the last second. Well, you should have seen what Greg Stumbo used to do. Like
that's what you hear every time.
That's what you hear every time. It's like Greg Stumbo used to do this. And it's okay for us to do it because Greg Stumbo used to do it. And his reputation about this has almost become bigger than his actual record. And I thought it would be worthwhile today to take a little bit of time to talk about him and his history in Kentucky's government, because he is actually a very complex person. And a lot of the stuff is like just legend. Who he is a lot more complicated than his record would present, both in the on the good side and on the bad side. So Greg Stumbo arrived on the Kentucky political scene in 1980 when he was elected to the House of Representatives from Prestonsburg, which is in eastern Kentucky. His first few terms in office were spent trying to reform the broad form deed process. Jasmine, have I told you about the broad form deed before?
No.
Okay. It was this really horrible system wherein individuals who owned land could have the mineral rights stripped away from them and were often swindled out of their land based on contracts that were like a century old. So this is this process. It was happened in like the 1800s when literacy wasn't quite what it was today. And basically people who own land in eastern Kentucky were told, hey, we'll pay you $100 if you just sign this deed and you can continue to live in your house, sign this thing, we'll get $100. And then 100 years later, somebody would present the broad form deed that they had signed that strips away their mineral rights, and all of a sudden the land below them would be mined. And it was a huge problem.
Dang, that's bad.
It was very bad. And this was something that was a big deal in Kentucky all the way up and through the 1980s. Actually, Jasmine, the reason I know best is it was the subject of my undergraduate thesis. So in those days, in the 1980s, Stumbo was a staunch ally of people who wanted to outlaw this practice, including a very, very young KFTC.
Yeah, I didn't even know that KFTC was around.
Yeah, they were actually called Kentucky's Fair Tax Coalition back in those days.
Oh.
Yeah, so they were buddy-buddy with Greg Stumbo, who was an environmental warrior back then in the early 80s. Eventually, the broad form deed was outlawed via constitutional amendment. So Greg Stumbo is often confused with his cousin. His cousin's name is Grady Stumbo. Grady Stumbo ran for governor in 1983 and then again in 1987. Grady Stumbo lost in the Democratic primary both times, which those days kind of doubled as just the election because the Republican Party wasn't as well developed back then in the 80s. And after the election in 1983, the Grady Stumbo campaign got in a lot of trouble for some campaign finance issues. And this is kind of the first evidence we kind of have as Greg Stumbo is this kind of like interesting political character who may not care as much about process or rules. So there was a last-minute media blitz for the Stumbo campaign, which was mostly funded by a very small number of donors. And the way that this works is that Grady Stumbo testified that his lawyer, whose lawyer was Greg Stumbo, told him that it was legal for him to just accept a bunch of money as a loan, a personal loan to himself, and then to donate that money to the campaign. Greg Stumbo said he thought that this would be legal under Buckley versus Valeo, which is a Supreme Court decision that said that a candidate could spend an unlimited amount of their own funds on the race. So that's kind of dubious. You would just kind of get a loan from a person and then say it's your money and then donate it to your campaign because there's no limit on the amount of money that you can spend.
That sounds more like trying to get around Buckley.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah, trying to use Buckley to get around rules that are established. None of this ever looked very good, but nobody ever faced any real charges stemming from it. It was a huge news story for a while, but then it kind of died down. After all of this, Greg Stumbo won an election to the majority leader position in the House of Representatives in 1983 when he was only 33 years old.
So he was also a very young lawyer when he was advising his cousin.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So he was the first Eastern Kentuckian to win a spot in leadership in a really long time. That was kind of a portion of the state that just didn't have a lot of leadership. The Democratic, what do we call it? The Kentucky Gibraltar in Western Kentucky. There were so many people from out there that were so long serving. That was where a lot of the leaders came from. Greg Stumbo came in from Eastern Kentucky and won the majority leader position for the first time in a long time. He was elected at the same time as Speaker Don Blanford of Owensboro, and they actually ousted a group of leaders who had been close to Martha Lane Collins, who was the governor before the person who was serving in 1983. Stumbo's tenure as majority leader would go on to be the longest of anybody who's ever served in that job. He was the majority leader in the House from 1985 until 2003. So that's like...
It's a long time.
It's a very long time. And he actually served under three speakers. So Blanford was convicted in the Botrot scandal in 1992, but he was speaker for quite a while. Joe Clark, who was kind of a transitional speaker, and then Jody Richards. And during the 18 years that Stumbo served as majority leader, he never sought that position. He never wanted to be speaker the first time he was in the legislature. While he was there, he shepherded major legislation involving campaign finance, legislative ethics, the lottery, and KIRA. And he might even deserve more credit than Paul Patton for getting KIRA across the finish line. KIRA, of course, being the major education reform in the 90s that moved Kentucky from the 49th best education system up into like the 30s and 20s. So, yeah, that was a big deal in the 90s. Stumbo's record when he was in the legislature the first time was staunchly liberal. He was a supporter of women's reproductive rights, environmental protections. We talked about the Broadform D, but he was also the chief sponsor of a bottle bill, which would like encourage people to recycle, and also of education reform, the KIRA Act. He was very progressive on these issues. And Stumbo was actually also not one of the people that was caught up in the biggest cases of direct corruption in Kentucky's recent history, which is the Botrot scandal. So he was not a part of that when it was going on. Stumbo decided to run for attorney general in 2003, and this was despite being sued in 2001 for child support for a child he fathered to a woman he was dating while married to his first wife. Stumbo actually beat back two primary challengers and won the general election despite the gubernatorial election swinging to the Republicans for the first time in a generation, so he really outran the party that time. However, the child support issue would continue to dog him during his entire term, so just a little bit about this sex scandal that was happening in the early 2000s. So in 2001, a woman named Travis Fritch sued Stumbo, saying that he had reneged on an informal child support agreement that they had made. Stumbo denied these allegations and claimed that her lawsuit was made in order to damage his political prospects. While Attorney General, Stumbo sued the woman in Floyd County, and the venue became the subject of a case before the Supreme Court of Kentucky while he was Attorney General. So as a sitting Attorney General and the person in charge of the child support world, because he's the Attorney General, he's suing this woman over child support, and the venue became, like, the venue. He's just like, I don't want to do this in Lexington. I want to do this in my home in Floyd County because this is where you're trying to besmirch me. Yeah, Stumbo actually eventually won the Supreme Court case, and the situation just kind of resolved itself because the child turned 18. But, I mean, it was not great. It did look very horrible. Right. I mean, it was very easy. He could have just kind of, like, let it die down, but he did not. And it was just, it was almost like, he was very much like bullying this poor woman who he had, you know, had a child with. And that's the way it seemed at the time. So as Attorney General, Stumbo was a persistent problem for Governor Ernie Fletcher. There was a massive complaint, it was like 300 pages, filed by an employee of the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet in 2004. And after that happened, Stumbo impaneled a grand jury, which eventually returned indictments against nine people, including the Republican Party chairman. This was all about merit hirings. Were you paying attention to Kentucky politics back then, Jasmine? This is... You were not quite.
No, I was not.
Yeah, I was in high school at this time, but I remember it very vividly. It was a big deal, and it really, Stumbo really did sink Ernie Fletcher. Ernie Fletcher was very, very unpopular because of the merit investigation, and the merit investigation happened because Greg Stumbo investigated it. And that was absolutely what happened. Fletcher eventually was named as an unindicted co-conspirator. I kind of hate that term because you have absolutely no recourse from that.
Yeah, and we've been hearing it a lot over the last 2 years.
We certainly have. We certainly have. So in my estimation, the vigorousness with which Stumbo pursued the Fletcher case going on at the same time as Stumbo's child support case is one of the core reasons that Republicans really hate him, probably even more than most other Democrats. But a bluegrass poll was taken in 2007 after his term had ended, showing that 47% of Kentuckians approved of the job he did as attorney general, with only 26% disapproving. So after his term as attorney general, he became part of a really large, massive 2007 gubernatorial primary. We've talked about that primary before. Josh Mers likes to talk about it as like one of the best ones because it was so competitive. We're kind of seeing a refresh of, you know, the competitive primary from 2007. I think there was like seven slates that ran on the Democratic side that year. But Stumbo actually surprised a lot of people by running for lieutenant governor on Bruce Lunsford's ticket. So Lunsford is a successful businessman and venture capitalist who lives in Louisville. He's run several times for public office, but he's never won. He ran for governor in 2007. He turned right around and ran for Senate in 2008 against Mitch McConnell. Mm-hmm. Didn't do very well. This ticket actually was the closest that Bruce Lunsford ever came to holding office. It came in second place. And it might have been pretty close. It ended up not being that close, but it might have been closer. But the most progressive candidate during that campaign, which was Treasurer Jonathan Miller, he dropped out at the last second and endorsed Steve Beshear, which put him over the top. I saw Jonathan Miller drop out and endorse Steve Beshear and said, well, I guess I'll vote for Steve Beshear. That's exactly what happened. So out of politics for the first time since 1980, Stumpo was often touted as a potential opponent to Mitch McConnell in 2008. You know, he's sitting around this massive, big Democratic person who's been in politics for a long time. But Stumbo's next move surprised everybody. He returned to the Kentucky House. I don't know if he surprised everybody. He's definitely surprised me. It was very mysterious. The man who was serving in Stumbo's old district just kind of abruptly resigned, said, I just don't want to do this anymore, setting up a special election. And so all of a sudden.
So yeah. Do we think Stumbo was like, hey, just give me my seat back.
Absolutely.
Just give it to me.
I absolutely think that that's what happened. Yeah. Speaker Jody Richards said at the time that it was great to have Greg Stumbo back. He did not say that for very long. Despite not being a member of the budget committee or the conference committee on the budget, Stumbo actually served as the chief negotiator for the House with Senate President David Williams. Remember, we had divided government back then with a Democratic House and a Republican Senate.
We did.
Yeah, and the Courier Journal credited Stumbo as saving the 2008 budget. If you remember, we've talked about this too. This is coming off the heels of two failed budgets. And also, there was this Supreme Court case in 2005 that said you have to pass a budget. So they passed one in 2006.
Right, we almost didn't have one that one time.
Yeah, exactly. And that was becoming more and more fraught. This is the fourth budget that we had divided government over, and two of those had failed. So we needed to have a budget. And the Courier-Journal was like, without Greg Stumbo, this would not have happened. And then the next thing we knew, Greg Stumbo was Speaker of the House. This is kind of an interesting story. So he announced he was going to run against Jody Richards for the speaker's seat after the 2008 election, and he managed to pull off the coup very surprisingly. Both candidates, this is widely reported. Everybody was like, who's going to be speaker? Is Greg Stumbo going to be able to win? Is he going to be able to take down an incumbent? Richards was like, I've got the votes. I know I'm going to win. Stumbo was like, I've got the votes. I know I'm going to win. And then at the end of the day, Greg Stumbo won. In the aftermath, he removed several committee chair people who had supported Richards, including Mary Lou Marzian and Joni Jenkins.
Ooh.
Right. That's sad.
We like them.
Yeah, we do. And it really reduced the number of chairmanships that the city of Louisville had. Jefferson County had like four or five chairmen, and these two left, and he added Larry Clark, who is a House member from southwestern Jefferson County, as a supporter of his to one of the chairmanships. And he said, you know, this is purely political. Was very straight up and was like, they didn't support me. There were people that supported me that wanted to be chairman, so I made those people chairman. So there you
go. It's honest, I guess.
It is. It is. And we'll get into that in just a second. So Stumpo's speakership actually, you know, we know this. It coincided with the declining prospects of Democrats in state elections.
It did.
Yeah. So Stumpo took over as speaker. The Democrats had added to their caucus, added one seat during that election, and they had 65 total seats, which is even more than than the Republicans have now. That's kind of wild to think about, isn't it?
Yes. And it makes the demise feel even worse.
Right. But I mean, it can't happen just that quickly. In 2010, the next election, Democrats won 58 seats. So that was a pretty substantial loss of like seven seats. In 2012, they maintained that level. In 2014, they dropped down to 54. So they lost four seats that next election. And then, of course, the dam broke in 2016 when Democrats only won 36 and actually lost Greg Stumbo's own seat. So as Speaker, Stumbo is constantly battling with the Republican Senate and an increasingly emboldened House Minority Leader in Jeff Hoover. So, you know, you have the Republican Party that's increasing in power. Their caucus is growing and growing. And also a lot of Democrats are starting to defect from the Democratic Party on votes on, you know, social conservative issues. And you have an emboldened Republican Party that's really pushing to take votes that, that you know, Speaker Stumbo really didn't want to take. But the two biggest problems, the two biggest issues when he was speaker were probably the LRC sexual harassment scandal and the pension issue with respect to the budget. So the LRC sexual harassment scandal was really horrible. But the ending was actually relatively nice. Both parties came together to hire David Byerman, who was a home run hire for that job. I think everybody was pretty happy while they had divided government, but then, of course, he was fired. Right.
I think you're the president of the David Byerman fan club.
I, you know what? I'm happy to take that spot. So the pension issue with the budget culminated for Stumbo in 2016. Republicans flatly refused to even vote for the budget bill, which passed 53-0. No Republicans voted at all. This was Governor Bevin's first budget, and it called for fully funding the ARC for the first time in a long time. And in order to do that, he said we needed to massively cut into higher education funding. Of course, Stumbo's budget didn't want to do that. Republicans were basically cut out of the whole negotiating process at all until the conference committee, which was made up of mostly House Democrats and Senate Republicans. And they came up with a compromise that did manage to fully fund the ARC. So since 2016, when he lost his reelection, Greg Stumbo has been on the sidelines, acting as kind of a bogeyman for Republicans. That's kind of what we referred to as at the beginning. So during the 2017 session, I think this was kind of funny, Stumbo tweeted a picture of snow-capped mountains when he was on vacation, and I thought, you know, it's kind of great. Now, however, it appears he wants to get back in the game. So Jasmine, what should we think about Greg Stumbo? To me, this all comes down to how you think about the use of power in politics. There's a couple of axes in politics that I can think of. You know, we have the left-right one that we talk about, like left-wing and right-wing, and people kind of understand that one innately when we talk about politics. But I think that there's another axis that's like power and process. Stumbo's unafraid of wielding power, and I think he kind of almost sees process as like a nuisance. And there are people who fall all along that power and process axis across the political spectrum. So I would point out, you know, Julie Rack Adams and Morgan McGarvey as people in Kentucky's government now who are more like process-oriented people. You know, during the crazy special session that got called, like Julie Rack Adams is like, I'm trying to figure out this. I want to make sure everybody's informed. We want to make sure we follow the process. And you know, we've talked to Morgan about like striking deals with the other side and being really important to work with people to make stuff happen. But then there's people who really are more power oriented, Stumbo being one on the Democratic side, and then Matt Bevin, of
obviously.
Course.
Yeah. That's the obvious answer,
like,
right?
You know, completely killing all these boards and reforming them. Like that's what you do when you have power.
Right. I'm gonna do this and then figure out the rest later.
Yeah, I'm gonna do this because I can. The reasoning behind it be damned. Like, you know, yeah. I don't really care. And I think the thing about it is many people get upset about politicians who disagree with their stances on political issues who actually wield power, but they also get upset when politicians they agree with refuse to wield power. And that's kind of something we should probably think about more when we're thinking about politics. Stumbo was never afraid to wield power, and in doing so caused a great number of Republicans to get very, very upset. But the aftermath has caused a great many Democrats to feel kind of guilty about things that have happened. I think that a good way to think about Greg Stumbo and how you should feel about his candidacy is to say, if you're truly upset, and the way which Republicans have conducted legislative business over the past 2 years or so, you should probably not be the biggest fan of Greg Stumbo. If you're on the Republican side and you think that all the things that the Republicans have done over the past 2 years is totally fine and you're complaining about Greg Stumbo, you don't actually care about Greg Stumbo. You just don't like that he's a Democrat. If you're a Democrat and you like the fact that Greg Stumbo was able to, you know, stave off right to work and stave off a lot of abortion restrictions for a very, very long time, you know, you should think about that. That's him. He's the one that kept those things from happening. That's what the Republicans were upset about. And you know, since he's been gone, the dam absolutely broke on those sorts of things and they all got passed. So
it's not his fault that the dam broke because lots of people lost their elections.
Right. But I mean, if Greg Stumbo had not been speaker and had allowed for a vote on that, a couple of those abortion restriction bills that passed in 2015,
right,
they would have passed with 75 votes.
Yeah,
probably.
Because there are Democrats in Kentucky that vote for those things.
Absolutely. But yeah, I think that's the best way to think about it. You know, he's not afraid to wield power. And if you think that's okay, you should like Greg Stumbo. If you are concerned about process, you know, you may not like him as much. So what does his actual candidacy mean? And I think this actually gets us right back to what you said at the very beginning. I understand that Stumbo's departure from politics felt a little bit more unceremonious than he had hoped for, probably. He wanted to, you know, be elected governor or something and ride out into the sunset. But Stumbo himself has ended several politicians' careers unceremoniously himself. You think about, you know, Jim LeMaster, who is the, you know, the first speaker that we talked about, who he defeated in 1983. Jody Richards, the speaker who he defeated, you know, two decades later. You think about Ernie Fletcher, whose governorship was just a disaster thanks to the work that he did. And there's several others. That's how this business goes. If you're a politician, this is likely to happen to you. You tend to flame out. You don't tend to ride off into the sunset. Even though his loss in 2016 was a bit of a surprise, it might not have needed to be as such a surprise. He'd shown significant weakness in his primary election earlier that year, beating back a primary challenger by only 10% of the vote. And I think in much the same way that his own political career began, by sweeping out an older generation of Democratic leaders in favor of more vibrant, younger, more liberal candidates. The smaller Democratic caucus of today is now significantly younger, much more colorful, and much more liberal in the sense of what that means in 2019 than what it did in 1983. I think if Stumbo actually faces a primary challenge, he's going to struggle. I think that that's going to happen.
And I think if he doesn't face a primary challenge, he is going to struggle
right.
in the general against yeah. Whitney Westerfield, who's a much younger, popular,
more vibrant
Republican legislator.
Yeah, or potentially another person, which we'll get into now that we're going to talk about quick hits. Or did you have more about Stumbo that you wanted to talk about?
Nope.
Okay.
We talked about him quite a bit.
Right, we did. So quick hits, I did want to talk about just very quickly other people who are running for offices that are not governor and not Greg Stumbo. So so Josh Merz, who's a friend of the pod, been on here twice. Three times. He's been on here three times. Yeah, how about
that? He has.
He filed paperwork to run for auditor. So that's kind of cool. As of today, he's the only Democrat in that race. Other Democrats running include Jason Griffith, who's running for Secretary of State. So along with Greg Stumbo, they are the only two Democrats who are running statewide at all so far, not for governor. No candidates for treasurer or agriculture secretary. Treasurer doesn't actually do anything, and Democrats have not been able to win the ag seat for a forever long time. So that's not too surprising, especially since the way that down ballot people were treated on the Democratic side. I think that fewer and fewer people are seeing that as a viable opportunity to extend your career. So on the GOP side, though, there are several declared candidates. So they are having, you know, three people run for re-election, including Auditor Mike Harmon, Agriculture Secretary Ryan Quarles, and Treasurer Allison Ball. So there are also several new candidates. There are four people on the Republican side running for Secretary of State. That includes Michael Adams, Carl Nett, Stephen Nipper, and Andrew English. And also two people who are running for Attorney General. You mentioned Whitney Westerfield, but he is going to face a primary opponent in Daniel Cameron, who is an African-American person who works for Frost Brown Todd, who used to work for Senator McConnell's office. And that will be a stiff primary. I think, you mm-hmm. know, Westerfield obviously won this primary last time and is a good politician. But I think, you know, Daniel Cameron's no slouch, and he's going to have the support of McConnell's office. So that's going to be something that he's going to be able to count on. So that'll be interesting. And also we have one challenger on the Republican side for Secretary of Agriculture, and that's Billy Polyniak, who is running against Ryan Quarles in that primary. So significantly more Republicans than Democrats running. Not too surprising, though, to me. And lastly, we got an update on fundraising for the statewide elections. And on the governor's side, Andy Beshear has raised about $1.7 million in the two quarters where he has run. And Rocky Adkins has raised about $623,000 over one quarter. So that's a little bit less than half of what Andy Beshear has been able to raise so far. Andy Beshear clearly has a significant head start, and getting in early, I think, probably paid off for him. I think I'm going to go ahead and call that. Rocky Adkins yelling at him probably didn't. People already forgot that, and he just ends up now having a whole bunch more money than Rocky Adkins does. So
yeah,
there you go. All right, Jasmine, that's it for us. How can people get a hold of us?
They can find us on Twitter at @myoldkypod. They can like our Facebook page. You can subscribe to our newsletter at forwardky.com/email. Last week, you and I gave our 2018 superlatives.
We did.
So if you missed that newsletter, you can go back and read the archives.
Please do.
And we also have a Patreon page where you can sponsor our podcast for as little as $1 a month. That's at patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast. And finally, you can find our podcast on the podcasting app of your choice.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.